The great John Madden, one of America's most impressive philosophers, said that the ultimate deodorant in professional sports is winning.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your folks to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us all back to our own personal field of dreams. And the Museum of Sports Show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. The Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePatcha Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his legendary cave in Villanova, our guide and mentor and Comcast Spectacor legend, founder of the Museum of Sports and author of the forthcoming book On Thin Ice about his time at the Spectrum with the Flyers, ladies and gentlemen, my illegitimate father, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hi, Lou.
Well, son, let me tell you, very interesting. Willie Mays turned 90 very recently, a couple of days ago, matter of fact. And I had the privilege of seeing him in his first game ever. The Giants, New York Giants, had brought him up from Trenton, where he was a phenom, and he struck out four times that day. And that was 70 years ago on May 25th. I was 15 years old. And I remember seeing him strike out four times, and I said, he's not going to make it.
Famous last words. And Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter, off this week. Coming up in our first half hour, he's a casino, comedy, and pop rock expert. Chuck Darrow is here. How a man managed to massage all that in one career, I'll never know. And at 4:30, it's our weekly sports memorabilia segment with our own king of sports collectibles and Museum of Sports partner, Mr. Nick DePatcha Jr. is here. And you cannot miss Lou Scheinfeld's X-Rated Tales from the Spectrum, how Joe Frazier landed Lou a key sponsor without lifting a finger. But up first, he got his start as an executive assistant during the Sixers' lowly years in the early 70s, but went on to rescue struggling franchises in the NHL, MLB, pro soccer, and the NFL. He's the founder of Dolish & Associates and has done many, many other things, which we probably don't have time to mention here. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to Mr. Andy Dolish. Andy, how are you?
Well, it's great to be with you, Doug and Lou, and you said it best, that with all the challenges we have, we all remember our first sports event. And I've got a pen and ink drawing in my office of Ebbets Field. I was 5 years old. My dad took me and my two older brothers to a game at Ebbets Field. Even though I don't remember what happened 69 years ago, I absolutely see every blade of grass perfectly and the hit a sign, win a suit ad in the outfield.
Who did the pen and ink? Because what we do, and I started telling you this pre-show, is periodically we will scare the living hell out of some of our guests, John Wertheim, some of the others, when they talk about some of the things they've just sort of collected, you know, maybe borderline hoarded over the years. And Nick will come on and say, oh, that's worth a few hundred bucks. That's worth a thousand. He told one of our guests his handwritten letters from, help me, Lou, who's our guest, Ron Rabinowitz, who's got the handwritten letters from Jackie Robinson when he was a kid, worth $500,000. So who was the pen and ink drawing by? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't. I can't look at it right now, but I will look and get back to you guys. And thinking about memorabilia while I have Lou on in the museum, not at this location, but at another, I have an autograph ball of the 9 and 73 76ers.
Wow.
And I would be honored to have it, to donate it and be shown, because that record will never be broken in the history of the NBA. And it was in the Spectrum, and there are so many incredible stories. I have a manuscript for a book that will never be published called Hoops Hades, My Year with the 72, 73, 76ers. And boy, were there stories in there.
Well, we do
that. Sounds like a streaming series.
we have a section called the Hall of Shame, and that would fit right in there.
Okay, I want it there. We got flyers, we got fights, we got all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
You might want to have a spot appraisal from Nick Jr. the next time you're on, Andy, before you just give it away to Lou.
I have two Koufax rookie cards, and what is it, NFTs? I don't get it, right? Like, you take a picture of something and sell it for $75 million. I
think it's the latest version of snake oil.
I'm missing it. It's like Dogecoin. I'll pay for it in Dogecoin.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, Andy, I asked you this before the show. I said one would have thought your start during the bad old days of the Sixers with the record worst record would have scared you off into another profession. Why did it not?
I learned early on, and Lou would know this, the Sixers were such a small organization. You look at teams now, they have 200 people in their front office. Right. We had the amazing, legendary Harvey Pollack. Right. As a mentor, we had Dave the Zinc Zinkoff teaching me about the business of sports. Our owner, Irv Kozloff, was like Howard Hughes. He was never around. He would come to games, but he was non-involved.
Right.
Don DeJardin, who hired me, I worked with three other guys from Ohio University sports management program. He took the fall for the 72-73 debacle. Roy Rubin, you know, who was an LIU coach. There's just so many pieces of this, but I got to train under Richie Iannarella and so many other quality people that I love to run to chaos and disaster. So if you wanted to work for the New York Yankees or the Flyers at their height, get in line. You ain't going to get a job. How many resumes do you think the Sixers got the season after they went 9-73? None.
A land of opportunity.
And Lou would know when DeJardin, who was a good man, I liked Don a lot, he's since passed. We didn't have a GM for a while. So me, Pete Schneider, Mike Rosen, Iannarella, we got to basically do stuff that you would never get to do. I helped redesign the uniforms that block Sixers that they still use today. Wow. We were able to do promotions that Koz probably never would have approved because nobody was home. And we got to steal good ideas from the Flyers who were right next door, who were riding on the wave of quality.
Wasn't Jack Ramsey there then?
Jack Ramsey left, remember, to go to Portland.
All right.
And that's when Rubin and Paul Lizzo came in.
Oh, man.
And Roy Rubin, let's just say his success at Long Island University did not transfer to Leroy Ellis, Freddie Mad Dog Carter, Dale Schluter, and a bunch of other guys that couldn't hit the back of a backboard if it was right there.
Well, you know, when we were building the Spectrum, we needed the 76ers to be a co-tenant, and Irv Kozloff was playing at the convention hall and some games at the Palestra. And he said, I don't need fancy digs. I don't want high rent. So we finally convinced him he's got to come in because we were going to get the mayor to close him out. And he said, just give me room for 12 jock straps. That's all I want.
No, that's what not good. And you know, Koz, you know, a very nice man, I think miscast as the owner, but Ike Richman was the guy. And he was the person, along with Eddie Gottlieb, absolute genius. Eddie Gottlieb is one of the great minds in the history of sport. Also in promotion, Bill Veeck got a lot of credit, but Gotti did stuff that nobody had done. South Philadelphia Hebrew Association, all that stuff. But when Ike Richman passed, right, he died at a game, right, Lou?
Playoff game in Boston.
Yeah, he keeled over and died. And he had supposedly a special deal with Chamberlain.
Right.
He got his salary, but he got a piece. And then when Chamberlain went to Kozloff and said, hey, do we still have the deal? Koz goes, what deal?
Right.
Show me a contract. Didn't have it. And Wilt went away. Jack Ramsey traded away the great Chet the Jet Walker. And in 68, 69, I think they were 68-13.
Wow.
Billy, you know, Wally Jones, Billy the Kangaroo Kid, Hal Greer, Wilt, they kicked everybody's butt. And then a few years later, boy.
Where would Andy, where would the sports, the business end of sports be were it not for sort of those seat of the pants, gut instinct, you know, throw it against the wall and see what sticks years? Because it all very quickly went to demographics, psychographics,
analytics. Oh, analytics and metrics. You could put it up my duodenum. You know, Lou and all the people around him, in the Flyers, they saw the future, regional sports networks, multiple teams, the building, merchandise. And, you know, I was a dumb 23 or 24 year old, but I learned to see what they were doing. And one of the great things about the Sixers, we had to have giveaways and we were able to do things that nobody else was doing and creating nicknames and creating stories around the players, because that's what sports is. It's storytelling. And all the analytics and metrics stuff, it's great, but there's still people that went, oh, I'm drafting this guy in the 10th round and he's going to turn out to be a Hall of Famer. And all the analytic and metric guys, that guy is out of the league in a year.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you spent time, as we mentioned, you know, with the Maryland Arrows, the National Lacrosse League, the Capitals. You spent time, your longest stint with the Oakland A's, and Billy Ball has, I guess, become sort of synonymous with one of your campaigns there.
Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about Moneyball. And you know, you mentioned John Wertheim, and the three of us are very lucky to know a lot of people with big time names and high quality histories. When Michael Lewis wrote Moneyball, people say, Andy, you know, were you in the movie? And I go, no, I was gone by then. But I did Billy Ball, which was Billy Martin. It was all about the promotion, back to what Lou and I had dealt with, promote, promote, promote. And when you're done promoting, promote some more. And when I see Billy Bean at events, I go, hey, Billy, I have something you don't have. And Billy looks at me like, well, what would that be? And I go, a World Series ring. He doesn't like that. But, you know, you look at analytics and metrics for those years that the Haas family, the people that own Levi Strauss, owned the A's, we averaged about $2.3 million a year. The current A's under John Fisher are struggling to draw $1.2 million or $1 million through in the same city, in the same ballpark.
And what do you see? And Lou and I have talked about this with some other guests and some of Lou's contacts in sort of the sports facilities world, about the impact of the pandemic on exactly that attendance. You know, are we just going to see this reluctance that's going to be kind of baked into the pro sports industry from now on?
Amazing timing. I had a conversation with a friend of mine from the 49ers, one of the other places I worked, and I can't do virtual backgrounds. So I just, as you can see here, I just have hats of every place I worked. And then I can, I worked there. I did this. And we were talking about the fact that of all the major sports, I think football, the NFL, just bull rushed its way right through COVID. They went, we're the NFL. Nothing scares us. And the other sports, to a certain extent, have suffered a bit. And I think baseball more than others. So to that question, I'm not one that believes in the new normal. I believe in the new different. I believe sports is changing through the digital capabilities, through gaming to come, and venues will have to change. Lou knows that the guys down in Washington, D.C., Ted Leonsis, they're creating a casino as we speak inside their facility where the Caps and the Wizards play. That would be unheard of. And that's changing now. So I think venues will be downsized to a certain extent. And if you can't use every digital device known to man, because this thing, everybody is their own broadcast entity, right? Yep. This is Spectacore today. Spectacore was a bit different, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. It's changing.
Hey, Andy, before we go, you mentioned you have got a new book out, Loss of Logo, What's Your Next Move? Right. Very briefly, what's it about? Where can folks find it?
It's about what Lou and I represent. I mean, I've been with 12 different sports organizations. Wow. If you're in sports, you move around. And especially in the pandemic, you're told, oh, you're fired, you're furloughed, what am I going to do next? This is about, for careerists who are in the business, how they define themselves by who they are, not what's on their cool looking business card. If you're not Lou Scheinfeld, that stands for quality every day, it doesn't matter if it says Stanley Cup champions, it doesn't matter if it says Spectacor. You need to define yourself by who you are, not what is on your business card. And that's what Loss of Logo stands for.
Well, I'm going to tell my wife that I deserve more respect.
And I'll tell my wife, and they can get together and go, those guys are both full of crap.
Yeah, exactly. So that's available on Amazon and all other fine places.
Exactly, exactly.
Hey, we want to make sure next time you come on, you bring some of that memorabilia, and I just want to see the reaction on your face.
I want to bring it on. I'd love to be a guest whenever you want me. Lou, I'm going to box up the ball when you tell me where to send it. It's been absolutely great talking with you guys today, and you know, in San Francisco, there's, oh, we're really a high class sports city. We're winning championships and all that. And they are. I mean, they're great. But yeah. DNA, no, Philadelphia. DNA, you're never.
Amen.
No, nothing's close.
Amen. Hey, pro sports fixer, good guy, and friend of the show, Andy Dolish, thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show. Bring your stuff back, and we'll shock the hell out of you.
It's great. I'll sign it all myself with somebody else's signature. It'll be great.
No, Doug. No.
Doug, Lou, thank you guys. Be safe.
All right. All right. See you, Andy. See you next time. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to find out more about Philly's Sports Shrine so you can be part of it by making a tax-deductible donation today. When we come back, casinos, pop rock, stand-up comedy. What hasn't our next guest, Chuck Darrow, done? All of that coming up when the Museum of Sports show continues here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
The Molly Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Molly Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to mollyplotkingroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to mollyplotkingroup.com.
It was once known as the Queen of Resorts, a summer watering place for the East Coast gentry that after the 1930s went quickly to seed. Gambling, so the pitch went, would restore the boardwalk's luster, put Atlantic City back on the nation's monopoly board.
On Talk 860 and the Museum of Sports Facebook Live page is brought to you by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan Baxter is off this week. Our next guest's nickname is Boardwalk Charlie, and no, that doesn't mean he lives under the boardwalk. He spent decades covering the casinos in Atlantic City, as well as entertainment and theater in Philly. He's sort of a pop music, pop rocker himself. He's performed with, I didn't realize this, the legendary Philly guy, Ken Queter, who's a longtime friend. Our next guest is also a stand-up comic. He's done talk radio with our own producer, Brett Kronberger, and he's just a plain old man about town, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to Mr. Chuck Darrow. Chuck, can you hear us?
I can, but I'm getting like a second feed here, like an 860 promo.
Oh, hell if I know that.
I'm out here in the commercial.
So you have, oh, do you have clothes on, Chuck? Do you have clothes on? It could be that Zoom is automatically censoring you if you don't have clothes on.
Yeah, so I'm getting like the delay from what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a darn good question. And I ain't technically adept enough to know
You know what, guys? I'm so sorry. Let me try to log back in. I'm going to log off and log back in, okay?
All right, cool. And Lou and I will sing some songs.
Take your time. You know,
I don't know if you heard that clip I played off the top there. That was Morley Safer from 60 Minutes about 25 years ago, talking about the ebb and flow of Atlantic City going from sort of the resort for the well-heeled to down and out to essentially being kind of rescued. If you consider being rescued by casinos, rescued. And it's one of those things, I guess, when our next guest, Chuck Darrow, was sort of cutting his teeth. He was there when they approved gambling for Atlantic City. Is that your recollection, Lou?
Yeah, he's been there forever. And Atlantic City was in pretty bad shape in the 60s. And when gambling was approved, which I think was like 1969 or thereabouts, it became an island of casinos, and everything around it closed. All the restaurants, all the places people used to go shopping, Atlantic Avenue became deserted. There was shadowy people, you might say, up and down Pacific Avenue, a lot of ladies of the night. And
it was all pawn shops and hookers.
That's I didn't want to say that. I don't say pawn shop, but okay. Yeah. And he covered the entertainment. And but his comments on Facebook and Instagram about the Philadelphia sports fortunes, or lack thereof, are pithy, witty, and wise. And I said to Chuck, I'd like to get you on to talk about some of these Philly teams as well as your background.
I think Mr. Pithy, Witty, and Wise is back with us. Chuck, yes. Is it any better?
Well, I still can't get video, the stupid computer, but I can at least hear you without hearing the delayed feed. So, hey guys, thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
So Chuck, I don't know if you could hear your intro, but we pretty much had you from one end of the spectrum as a pop rocker, stand-up comic, talk show radio guy, entertainment theater writer, covering casinos. So are you just sort of the chronic overachiever? Is that how we need to?
No. I do that to avoid working for a living. That's why I've been a reporter for 47 years, because I never really had any desire to actually work. And I decided, well, maybe I can get paid to have fun. So no, yeah. I am a lot of things, but a chronic overachiever, nah. More, it's like I'm an ADHD, you know, and I can't stay focused on one thing. And
oh,
of course,
good.
we all know what ADHD stands for, right? Attention deficit. Hey, donuts.
Yeah. So I don't know if you heard the little tease bite I used there. It was Morley Safer from 60 Minutes in like 1996, talking about the ebb and flow of Atlantic City, going from sort of the well-heeled resort to down and out to essentially being rescued by the casinos. And you were kind of there around the time that that sort of second wave came in. Did you see casinos as a savior for Atlantic City, or just sort of hastening its demise in one form or another?
No. Okay. So when the vote happened in 76, I was but a mere sprout. I was 20 years old, but I was writing for the Temple News, and I did actually cover. I went to Atlantic City that night. We were very ambitious, and we had people at Jimmy Carter's headquarters in Georgia and Gerald Ford's headquarters and so on. So I said, you know what? And I just had a feeling, it's strange, I couldn't articulate it, but I had a feeling that casinos coming to Atlantic City would have an impact on my life going forward, which they clearly did. I am big on casinos. I understand why people are against them, but I think that their zealousness is kind of misplaced, because, you know, the anti-casino folks will tell you gambling is bad. We should shut, because, you know, a small percentage, 10%, maybe less, of the population can't control themselves. They have a disease and it leads to very bad things. Okay, fine. But to say there shouldn't be casinos is saying, well, because a certain percentage of people drive drunk, we should outlaw automobiles. That makes no sense to me, because the overwhelming majority of people go to a casino and they're entertained for an evening. It's no different than going to a movie or a ball game, whatever. And I really enjoy, and I love pretty much every aspect of the industry. I have for many years. And one of the main reasons is because, it's the most American, it's the most democratic of all institutions or concepts, because in a casino, nothing else matters, not the way you look, not your race, not your religion, the color of your skin. The only color that matters in a casino is green.
Green.
Yep. And you are treated, no matter who you are, what you are, what you do, you are treated equally. And I think maybe we need more of that, not less. But to get back to your original question, I wasn't really thinking in terms, I mean, I had known, because I grew up in a culture in Northeast Philly where Atlantic City was our sure destination. And I, as a high schooler, went down there with my friends, stayed overnight. And yeah, it was scary. It was crummy. So when I started to read about the concept of bringing legal casino gambling, in my 20-year-old mind, it made a lot of, why not? Because they couldn't go on doing what was going on, because that was certain death. So why not try this? And I think there's a parallel today I see with cannabis, that Atlantic City can rebuild yet again with that. But that's another story.
Well, it's interesting, Chuck, that for so many years, major league teams thought gambling was a terrible sin, and they wouldn't even advertise or this or that. Then they start taking their ads. And now that gambling's been approved, sports betting, they're all over it trying to cash in. And the same thing with cannabis. That's Atlantic City's newest savior. Smoke and gamble and get sunburned and get drunk. So to me, that's the slogan, right?
Well, I wrote a column for Philly Voice several years ago that I suggested that they should take Bader Field and turn it into the East Coast's main cannabis research, development, and growth facility, and also a cannabis museum. I think that would attract a lot of people, and something that would bring people to Atlantic City.
Chuck, I got to ask you, and Lou and I have talked about this before, is that I think the sin that Atlantic City had committed for decades was ignoring what it was that separated it from Vegas, and that was an ocean. They said anything that wasn't gambling was competition. So you didn't want people coming to the beach because they'd lie on the beach and not go in the casinos. You didn't want other tourist attractions there because they would go to those and not go to the casino. By the time they sort of figured out the beach and other attractions thing, you had all these empty buildings there and
I don't disagree with you. Yes, especially the first 10, 15 years, certainly. It was all about getting those people inside, keeping them inside as long as possible. But regardless of what they could have done or didn't do, the fact is that it's all about convenience gambling. That's what killed Atlantic City. Simply, grandmas, I always use the sort of the analogy, not analogy, but the illustration that you had for many years. You had grandmom and grandpa living in, say, Northeast Philly. They'd hop a bus once a week, once a month, whatever. They'd go to Atlantic City. They had their favorite slot machine, and they'd get their coupons. They'd get their free buffet, whatever it was. And they all they wanted, they didn't want $200 spa treatments. They weren't looking for celebrity chef meals at the gourmet restaurants. They didn't care about headliners, certainly not about DJ, the big time DJs in the dance clubs. All they cared about was going and playing that slot machine. And all of a sudden now Parks opens in 2009, I guess it was, or 10. And instead of an hour and 20 minutes from the Northeast to Atlantic City, that same slot machine is waiting for them maybe 10, 15 minutes away. And that was writ large in North Jersey when it's now Wind Creek. Originally, it was the Sands in Bethlehem opened. And not only was it like an hour less time to get to Bethlehem from Atlantic City, but it was 175-cent toll. Whereas I remember reading, somebody did the research that if somebody came from, say, Essex County up in North Jersey, before they even walked through the door, with tolls and gas and whatever else, parking, they're talking at six, I think it was $16 before they even got into the onto the casino floor. So yeah, really, that nothing else mattered once Pennsylvania opened up, you know, their casinos.
So Lou, I know you've got some stuff for.
I always enjoyed reading your. I had a house in Ventnor for almost 30 years, a second house, and I was there before gambling, and I sold it, almost 30 years later, and I always enjoyed reading your stuff, Chuck.
Thank you, Lou.
And also a fellow by the name of Pinky Kravitz.
Pinky.
He was legendary, and he was, I don't know how the guy got around to all the shows and free meals and everything, but
he was at everything, and he was, you know, obviously I got to know him and spent many an evening and sometimes daytimes, you know, sitting next to him at shows or at a dinner or something. And he was one of a kind. He truly was Mr. Atlantic City. He was always so nice to me. I mean, that meant a lot to me too, that a guy like Pinky would accept me as kind of, you know, one of his own, if you will. So yeah, great, great guy.
Chuck, before we let you go, I was telling Doug before that I enjoy your pithy, witty comments about Philadelphia sports teams on Facebook and other places. Isn't it frustrating to be a Philadelphia sports fan?
Look, we all have our crosses to bear in life. That's all I can say. Yes, of course it is. I would, you know, I often wonder, well, gee, what would it be like to have grown up in the Boston area, you know, or, right, or out in LA or San Francisco? But this is the hand that I've been dealt. And, you know, you talked, one of you mentioned at the top of the show about the first time you went to a game. And I had the absolute misfortune of my first Phillies game. Wasn't my first sport. My first Eagles game was September of 63. But my first Phillies game was September 27th, 1964, Sunday afternoon. And that was game 7 of the 10-game losing streak. And that whole episode, I wrote a comment, I said, for Philly Voice a few years ago when the Eagles were making their Super Bowl run. And I said, I'm sorry, but that season scarred me. I can't get excited because I know what is possible. Right. And until the clock shows nothing but zeros and the confetti is falling, no, I can't believe the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. I'm not negative. I'm just a lifelong Philadelphia sports fan who unfortunately became a real Phillies fanatic in 1964, and there's nothing I could do about it. So frustrating. I would probably enjoy it, or I would be a lot happier if it was merely frustrating. It goes a lot deeper. And as I wrote, you know, in that piece, you know, the scars are still there. Maybe you can't see them, but yes, the scars are there. Absolutely.
It's a crucible. It's a hardening process. It's a maturing process. And as I tell people, being a late add to Philly just over the last 26, 27 years, being a Philly sports fan doesn't drive you to drink. It just drives you to drink more.
Exactly. I mean, but you get a, you know, basically the way I always say it is, when you're a Philly sports fan, the one thing that you know intuitively and instinctively is that in front of every silver lining is a dark cloud.
Yes. Excellent. Hey, very quickly, Ken Queter, longtime friend. You're the second guest on we've had who's done gigs with him. Bill Schoening being the first, West Catholic boy who's been the longtime voice of the San Antonio Spurs. And so I saw some old videos of you up there from the last 10 years or so. With
I have known Kenny since I first wrote about him in March of 1976. I love him dearly. He is truly one of a kind. And, you know, I've been covering Philadelphia music since that's how I started as a music writer back in 74. And with all due respect to a lot of artists, the Hooters, and my dear departed friend, Robert Hazard, for whom I toiled as a road manager, when all is said and done, I truly believe that Ken Queter is the only real musical, you know, folk rock, pop musical genius.
Amen.
To come
Amen.
Out of Philadelphia in the past 50 years or so, or 45 anyway. He is just magnificent, and I love him dearly, and just... I can talk for an hour just about Kenny. Absolutely. What
wonderful guy.
Great guy.
Well, bon vivant, Chuck Darrow, thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show. Come back, bring your sports memorabilia. We'll scare the hell out of you with a spot.
I don't know if I have anything that's worth tons, but when I was a kid, real fast, when I back in the late 60s, from about 66, late 66 through maybe 70 or 71, this is before marketing and merchandising became huge. I used to send away to teams. I would just write letters. I still remember because I wrote 100,000 of them. And they said, please send me any decals, pictures, and information you have available. And I got some really cool stuff. And when I exhausted the major leagues, I have like a Seattle Totems program, you know, stuff like that.
I'm telling you, we'll have you back on. Nick Jr. will shock the crap out of you with his spot appraisals.
Great. And if I may, I'll say goodbye, but I just wanted to say how great it is. You know, for almost 3 years, I did a weekly entertainment show, that Showbiz on Age 60. So it's just wonderful to be back on the air there. And Brett was my producer, and I miss him.
Brett Kronberger, our producer. He was very happy to hear you were on.
So, gentlemen, thank you so much. It's been a real honor. Nice talking to you. Thanks, man.
Come back anytime.
Thank you.
And after the break, our own king of sports collectibles with the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection and our partner with the Museum of Sports when we return back here on the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
The Molly Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Molly Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to mollyplotkingroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to mollyplotkingroup.com.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Hey, we're back on the Museum of Sports show on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook Live pages. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan is off this week. The Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Up next, our king of sports collectibles, whose family's memorabilia collection is worth conservatively $35 million. And we are proud that the Museum of Sports is going to be that repository for that trailblazing collection. Please welcome back our amazing partner, Mr. Nick Depatche Jr. Hi, Nick.
Good afternoon, Lou and Doug.
So we had Andy Dolish. We had Andy Dolish on, who got his start back as an administrative assistant to the Sixers back in the bad old days of the early 70s. He has an autographed ball by the team that posted the worst record in NBA history. What would something like that be worth? I know you sort of said maybe not that much, but what do you think?
For some reason, I was thinking of the team that was during the process that won 10 games. I wasn't thinking about the team from the 70s when you had first mentioned it. So I have to, I don't remember the roster. If you can tell me, were there any All-Stars or Hall of Famers on that roster by any chance?
Not really. They were 9-73, and they hired a coach prior to that. Who accomplished that record straight out of Long Island University. And he lasted 1 year. He was gone. They went 9-73. And our guest, Andy Dolish, said he didn't think that record would ever be broken. So the whole team autographed it. It's like going into the museum's Hall of Shame.
I was thinking of the team during the process, the year prior to Embiid's rookie year, which I think would have been 2016. I forgot, but that team won 10 games, so they
Yeah.
I don't know the process. I tried to block out those 4 years.
Yeah.
But it got us to where we are now. So you know what?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. But anyway, yeah, they made it by one game. So yeah, I would say he'd be lucky to probably get 250 for it.
Huh.
Really?
Thousand or 100?
No, 100.
$2.50.
Yeah, no, it's not worth that that much, unfortunately. Unless you get a Sixers collector who really wants it badly, then it's always about getting the right buyer. I mean, but I'd say anyone who didn't hear me just say that would probably be the guys to go to that love the Sixers, and don't tell them anything. Just say, what would you pay for it?
Yeah. Well, I guess the memorabilia and collectibles market, you always celebrate winners, winning teams, you celebrate championships. When you sort of go to the other end of the spectrum, that takes a very unique collector, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's not much of a market for absolute terrible teams. Like the Orioles team that started the season with 21 straight losses, I believe in the 80s, was it? Like those historically bad teams, the historically great teams, of course, I mean, people love team sign balls or anything like that.
Yeah, you want the 17-0 Dolphins.
I'm just looking at the roster for that 1973 team. Dennis Autry, John Brock, Freddie Boyd, Bill somebody, Freddie Carter, Mel Counts, Leroy Ellis, Luther Green, Hal Greer. He's the only one.
Oh, Hal Greer.
That's a brand name.
On the ball?
Yeah, nobody else but Hal Greer. Poor Hal.
Is his name's on the ball, though?
Yeah.
Let's say it is, yeah.
That could definitely raise the value, maybe 100 or so.
260.
Really?
260.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... I think we're going to have a show on where for 45 minutes, we're going to bring back some of these folks who have these kind of kooky, quirky items. And we're just going to have you on for that first 45 minutes just to sort of, you know, shock the living hell out of them with some of their spot appraisals, like some of John Wertheim's media guides and the other stuff he's hoarded over the years. And some of the other items that have been a little sort of out of the ordinary. So what's happening in the collectible market? Are you seeing any new trends that are occurring or anything that's popped up on your radar? I always let Lou will ask the question, but we'll save that for the
I
end.
I think
of the
Lou segment. Will be happy this week. As far as the new trends going on, I feel like I'm being repetitive, but it's about cards and NFTs, rookie cards particularly. Tom Brady's rookie card sold for $1.28 million.
Oh,
I mean, cards are making a comeback. I don't know how long this is going to last. I don't know if the bubble's going to burst, but rookie cards in particular are just they're selling at incredible rates right now, and people are scooping up rookies, current rookies. So, you because know what?
You just don't know.
You're last, but I mean,
are they just grabbing wholesale rookie cards just on spec without any sort of real intel on them? Or are they doing it with some sort of, you know, scoutage behind them? Or are they just figuring they're going to buy as many rookie cards as they can, and hopefully, you know, 1 in 100 hits or 1 in 1,000 hits, it's worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a mixture of both. Now, back when Brady was a rookie, he has 44 different rookie cards. That's not the case today, because, I mean, back then they manufactured everything like there was no tomorrow. I think 6 different major card brands had license to do NFL cards.
Right.
So it wasn't like it is today. And a few of those companies don't even exist anymore. But the one that's most sought after is the Bowman rookie card of Brady, and those typically, I mean, those are like not the peak, but I'm saying like those are the ones that are in most demand, and right. they go for about 17,000 or so. But yeah, the ones that go for the most are like one of a kind, and talking about like the Chrome Refractor, they have those special editions, and they have to be autographed to go for that much. Yeah. And you know, it's crazy because when I was younger, I remember people telling me, and I'm not imagining this, that signing a signed rookie card was, you didn't want rookie cards signed. It was like signing the Mona Lisa. Now signed rookie cards are, any other card could be signed, but rookie cards were not supposed to be signed. Now that's not the case anymore. So
What was the reasoning for not wanting a signature? Because they wanted the card, they wanted sort of the unspoiled card and not, you know, besmirched with a signature or writing on it.
Exactly. But that changed. Huh. And maybe I'm imagining it, but I remember being told that distinctly. And I don't know at what point it became more valuable to have them signed. Intuitively, you'd always want them signed, right? But
you would think
it's the same thing. These rules are pretty arbitrary. Like we were talking about, if an autograph's personalized, then it loses value. I mean, it's just like it's the same handwriting from the same guy, the same yeah. ink from the pen. It's just, if it's personalized, it loses value. It's arbitrary. But you know, you got to go with the trends of the market, I guess.
Lou, do you want to call the question?
Nick, before I ask you the question, NFTs, non-fungible tokens.
You got it.
I spoke to your father about it last week, and he said, I really don't understand all that. He said, talk to Eric Katz or Nick Jr. So are you doing any NFTs with your collection?
We have not discussed that yet. I mean, we brought it up, I think, once or twice, but I'm sure Eric is busting at the seams to do it because he loves this new trend with NFTs and the crypto market, which, by the way, that's taken a dive recently. But I think Eric's a little obsessed with it.
He tried to explain it to me when we were at the Joe Hand gym when you unveiled this wonderful statue of Ali and Frazier that your dad commissioned. And he's tried to explain it to me. And I said, Eric, please, you're hurting my head. I had no idea what you're talking about. Now I'm seeing where people are paying all kinds of crazy money for a digital ownership of something. So I'm going to get with Eric. And I think there's some money to be raised for the museum there. But now to the question.
Exactly.
Did you folks borrow, steal, rent anything this past week?
So yes, actually, a few pieces of game used memorabilia, and I am not permitted to divulge the price we paid or where it came from. So, unfortunately, but I could tell you what it is. So this is a Gerrit Cole game used jersey from this year with the Yankees. It's a home pinstripe. His first win of the season. It was on April 6th. And he pitched 7 innings, struck out 13, walked 1, and allowed no runs. So, I mean, now they're obviously they can link it to which game where, like, jerseys from the 1920s or 30s, you can't do that. So that jersey has more value than, say, his next start where he had subpar stats or the start after that, whatever it is. Yeah, so that's a really nice jersey. Yeah. I think that it's going to appreciate in value because he hasn't even won a Cy Young yet. And I believe that's on the horizon. And I believe a world championship is on the horizon. Maybe not this year. Maybe this year after Kluber pitched last night, but after he threw the 6th no-hitter of the year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Gerrit Cole jersey is definitely a piece that is going to be one of the spotlights. And then a few lesser known items. So a bunch of Eagles pants were offered to us. And I looked through the list. They want it, I think, $7,500 for Jalen Hurts. Well, there, I just set a price, but we ended up getting, I chose three players that I think have a shot at making the Hall of Fame, and that would be Darren Sproles, Jason Kelce, and Fletcher Cox.
Oh, so great.
We have their pants. And I think it would be fun to compare the size of Cox's pants to the size of Sproles. Because Sproles and Cox are two opposite ends of the spectrum. And then
Sproles could fit in one Cox leg. If that, that sounds weird, but you know what I'm saying.
But it, yeah, people who know. Yeah. They don't know what you mean. And then a pair of Ben Simmons shorts that are blue from last season when he made all defensive first team.
So
I thought that was at a reasonable price, so I wanted to pick that up. So you're going for the bottoms.
You're into pants nowadays.
Nowadays, yes.
Any pants in a storm? Any pants in a storm? Well, Nick, I'll tell you what. We will set up that date for a all Nick scare the crap out of guests with spot appraisals show. So let us know. Give us a couple of dates when we can have you on, and we'll put our all stars like John Wertheim and a few of our other heavy hitters with the hoarders, as I call them, and we'll see what we can scare them with.
Yes, it's not necessarily what we would pay for them, but I think somebody will pay for them.
Exactly. That's the mandatory disclaimer. So our King of Sports Collectibles and Museum of Sports partner, Nick DePaccia Jr., thanks as always. We'll see you next week. And I think Susan Lou and I are going to be in studio next week.
And we've got Earl Reese. Promo. Earl Reese is a guest, too.
So we'll see if we're back in studio for good at that point, or
we'll get Merrill Reese's pants.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Golf.
You know what? Maybe. You never know. We got Johnny Unitas's jock strap, so you never know.
Yeah. That's a good one right before dinner time. Thanks, Nick. all right, Nick. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you guys.
All right. After the break, Lou Scheinfeld's X-rated Tales from the Spectrum. Joe Frazier secures a key sponsor for Lou without doing a darn thing when the Museum of Sports Show continues on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. But we'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DePaccia is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas DePaccia, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-58-0034. That's 856-589-6034.
The Molly Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Molly Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to mollyplotkingroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to mollyplotkingroup.com.
We're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and the Museum of Sports Facebook Live pages. This week's X-rated Tales from the Spectrum, Joe Frazier scores big for Lou Scheinfeld.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. We had just opened the Spectrum several months prior. You know that the Spectrum opened September 30th of 1967, right. Two-day music festival. But our first sporting event wasn't until October 17th. And that was really? Joe Frazier versus Terry Doyle, where he demolished him in two rounds. But then Joe came back to train for another fight against Oscar Bonavina in 1968, which turned out to be a bruising heavyweight fight. Yeah. Joe won unanimously, but it was quite a fight. But he came to the Spectrum for a PR photo op. And by coincidence, I was trying to land Gillette blades as a sponsor on the scoreboard and signage in the building, and that would have been a biggie for the building because sponsors were tough to come by when we first opened. And Gillette is a Boston company, Boston company, and they didn't think Philly was a good market for them. But I finally got these two executives from Gillette to come down to Philadelphia. And I walk them all through the building. I give them my pitch, and they are totally unimpressed. And they said, listen, we've got to catch a plane back to Boston, or whatever it was. And how do we get out of here? So I said, well, let's walk down the corridor. And I went to cut through the press room on the lower level, which is right off of the arena floor. And who's on the telephone? A payphone, making a phone call, but Joe Frazier. And he's got his wrist and his fist taped up, and he's wearing his trunks and his jeans, and he's all sweaty from sparring. And he puts down the phone and he says, hey, Lou, what's shaking? I said, Joe, let me introduce you to a couple of people from Gillette. He goes, oh, man, I love Gillette. I shave all the time with those two blades. Both ends are sharp. He said, that's really great stuff. He says, you guys make great products. Maybe you send me some. I'll do a sponsorship for you. Well, they said to me, well, it's nice to meet you. And they were all thrilled. And they said, Lou, can we talk to you for a second? I said, well, I'm kind of busy right now. Joe and I, you know, need to. So I take them up to my office. I wind up signing them to a $50,000 two-year contract. Total of $100,000, which was like $10 million at that point.
Yeah,
and I went back at, after they left, and Joe was still there. And I thanked him. I said, Joe, you're going to get a ton of razors. You're going to get blades of the yin yang. I said, you're going to get a lifetime supply. So Joe said, well, man, glad to help you. Anything I can ever do. Well, to me, that was a stroke of luck. So sometimes you're a lousy salesman. You get lucky. But running into Joe Frazier as these guys were trying to get out of the building as fast as possible was really a blessing. Or as we say, a close shave.
Yeah, exactly. And then you slipped him a grand and said, Joe, thanks a lot. Listen, I got sponsors from so-and-so coming tomorrow. I'll need you at the same payphone at the same time. We'll take a walk down there.
That was a great guy, good friend to the spectrum. And, you know, Dr. Tepachi was his personal doctor and supporter for many years. And Doc, commissioned that wonderful statue of Joe Frazier.
Yeah. And Doc has does he have Joe's Cadillac?
He has his pink Cadillac that he bought for him when Joe wanted to go into showbiz, and the family 25 years later went to sell it. And Dr. Tepachi says, I'll buy it back. And they said, you can't. You already bought it once. He says, I'll buy it from you. So he bought it back from it. That's the wonderful relationship that the Frazier family has with Dr. Tepachi.
Well, that's our time for this week. We want to thank all of our guests, franchise fixer Andy Dolish, bon vivant Chuck Darrow, and our own king of sports collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And please make sure you have gone to themuseumofsports.org to make a contribution today and be part of Philly's Sports Shrine. We need your help now more than ever. For Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter, I'm Doug Scheinmel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says.
These are the good old days.
These are the good old days. These are the good old days. These are the good old days.